They were chosen. U.S. Marine cartoonists in the Korean War. By Cord Scott. Introduction. Visual humor has always been an integral part of any military, and the U.S. Marine Corps is no exception. In the 20th century, a Marine Corps illustrator was assigned to Stars and Stripes newspaper during World War I to create a weekly cartoon. These cartoons revolved around the stories and emotions found in the trenches, or they took the petty peeves of the Marine in the field and allowed them to vent in a humorous manner. While seemingly insignificant to the overall war effort, the cartoons offered a small glimpse of life for the American ground troops. This tradition continued on throughout World War II, and by the time of the Korean conflict, Marines served in official and unofficial capacities as illustrators and cartoonists. Given the conditions in which the Marines fought, the production and preservation of these cartoons was difficult unless it was for use in a rear echelon capacity. Comic illustration was also used for training manuals or even a limited historical aspect. Following the war, these unofficial and official efforts carried on. Into this scenario came Norval Eugene Jean Packwood. His work covered all aspects of the Marine Corps, whether it was in the form of his recollections of boot camp in 1948, to his history of the Marines in the Korean War, or to covers and interior art found in Leatherneck and Marine Corps Gazette. This book discusses that visual aspect of the Corps' history as well as Packwood's role in telling that story and the impact it had on the troops and the American public. Chapter 1. Origins of Cartoonists. In the post-World War II era, cartoonists, film strip animators, and comic strip artists who, before the war, sought only to entertain were set to work to drive home the lessons that were to save American lives in battle and lead to victory. Cartoons were created to teach the skills of war, from dive bombing and aerial combat to bayoneting. Rules and regulations of each branch of the service were humorously pointed up to help newcomers in the armed forces become well-adjusted, disciplined servicemen. Frank Brandt. Combat can be terrifying under the best of circumstances. Any way to relieve the anxiety is often appreciated. Military service members in war zones have expressed these fears in a variety of forms, be it in poetry, writing, and illustration, among some of the more positive outlets. These vignettes allow the reader, who more often than not has been in a similar situation, to relate to the events around them. The U.S. Marine Corps was not the first military service branch to have a cartoonist in its ranks, but in the modern media age, it was the first branch to have one full-time, as Private Avian A. Wally Walgren became the cartoonist for the first iteration of the Stars and Stripes newspaper in 1917. His work, as well as the cartoons of several other Marines, in publications such as the Recruiter's Bulletin or Marines Magazine, served as a touchstone of humor in a violent end. By the time of the Korean War, the cartoons in publications such as Stars and Stripes were replaced mostly by art from the U.S. Army. However, Leatherneck and Marine Corps Gazette continued to offer humor specifically for Marines. Some of the cartoons were personal recollections rather than meant for wider consumption. These illustrations serve as an insight into observations that may offer another view of the war on a personal level. Much of this project is an extension of two previous papers, one on the Marine Corps cartoons of World War I and the other on the 60th anniversary of the Korean War, but it also goes into a bit more detail about the Marine Corps connection. Origins through World War II. Throughout the history of warfare, there have been certain commonalities for all combatants: the terror of combat, the tedium of training and life in camp, the long marches, and the memories of what occurred on the battlefields and beyond. To these ends, soldiers often depicted life in some form, be it poems, books, or artwork. The closer to the front, the more rushed and real the depictions. This is not to say that these illustrations are poor quality or not worthy of analysis. It simply means that the material is sometimes not taken as seriously as fine art. With the creation of mass media and the technical ways to transmit artwork to a wider audience, such as newspaper readers, the illustrations of soldiers became more common. There were often jokes buried in these illustrations that allowed a fellow combatant to relate to and commiserate on the conditions of life. Mass media and illustrations were not new. Political cartoons have been in use since the mid-1700s, but they took on a new popularity with the creation of the Yellow Kid in 1896. By World War I, the cartoon as a communication platform had proliferated with a variety of cartoonists serving in the military. The first U.S. military paper for the Western Front, Stars and Stripes, even hired a full-time cartoonist, Marine Corps Private Wally Walgren, to illustrate a variety of visual gags. His work was widely seen on page 7 of the weekly Stars and Stripes during its run. Walgren's humor in regard to the rigors of combat was well received. Throughout the next 3 decades, there were more examples of Marine humor. Leatherneck and Marine Corps Gazette published a variety of officers and enlisted Marines who illustrated jokes to lighten the mood. As the media changed and grew over time, so too did the artists and their styles. By World War II, there were more artists whose works reached the troops in the field. Not surprisingly, the material produced by the Marines in the Pacific Theater was not as widely known as that produced on the European front. This was certainly not due to a lack of material for writing, but to the conditions that would allow for any sort of preservation in the field. One notable book from that time was a Marine Corps-produced comic-style book, Tokyo Straight Ahead. The book featured a wide selection of small stories that gave practical examples of fighting the Japanese or demonstrated proper hygiene in the field. One story even told, in a somewhat ribald nature, of the need to wear prophylactics. This is not particularly risque by today's standard of cartoons or comics, but it was considered so at the time. Even with the poor conditions experienced during war, comic illustrations played a large part of how all the military services recorded the history of the moment, be it on aircraft, in publications, or as a type of educational tool. Among the most famous cartoonists of World War II were William H. Bill Malden and Irving David Dave Brieger, who both contributed illustrations to Stars and Stripes, and George Baker, who illustrated Sad Sack for Yank magazine. The Marine Corps' earliest examples include Tokyo Straight Ahead and Bless 'Em All, a cartoon history of Colonel Merritt A. Idson's Marine Raiders. For newly minted Marines, or those U.S. service members who graduated from basic training in the other military branches, a souvenir book of their time in basic training could be found in a series created by Ted Ritter and Bob Gadbois titled Boots and Boondocks, The Story of Marine Boot Camp, where the generalities of life in boot camp were illustrated for comedic effect. All of these books had similar themes and allowed the owner to have others write in their copy, much like a yearbook. The similarities between this book and Gene Packwood's Leatherhead, The Story of Marine Corps Boot Camp, make for an interesting comparison. While the Ritter and Gadbois book is similar to the other commemorative books based on all of the military branches, common topics such as the issuing of uniforms, the shaving of the head, the medical inspections, and the drill instructors, Packwood's book was more about the Marine Corps in particular, and was based on his experiences. Both were embellished to some degree, but these books all describe the transformation of a civilian to a service member. Another book published in this era that captured the humor of the Marines was the Leathernecks book of Gyrene Jingles and Cartoons, Jingles being a playful portmanteau of Gyrene, a popular nickname for Marines, and musical jingles. This book also featured a variety of commentary, jokes, and cartoons that discussed aspects of combat in the Pacific during the war, as well as comments on the experiences in dealing with the Chinese during occupation duty in North China around Tsingtao, current-day Qingdao, from late 1945 through late 1947. One famous Marine who served in China at this time was Eugene B. Sledge, who wrote the combat memoir With the Old Breed and a follow-up book on his time in China, China Marine. Sledge served in Peiping, current-day Beijing, and the general area near there. The Marines in China were used to keep the peace as the Japanese military was slowly withdrawn, but more often they were placed in situations of violence between Chinese nationalists, Chinese communists, and various warlord or criminal elements. Some of the cartoons featured in the Leathernecks book of Gyrene Jingles and Cartoons featured cartoons that referred to the struggles at hand. The majority of the cartoons prior to 1950 were those centered on duty overseas in places such as China or, more often, the typical focal points of any Marine, women, libations of some kind, or the tedious duties associated with military service. One Marine cartoonist from Gyrene Jingles was Bob Donovan, who later gained fame as an illustrator of Barney Google and Snuffy Smith. Donovan spent more than 2 years overseas with the Marine Corps on Okinawa, New Zealand, and Guadalcanal and was involved in the liberation of Guam, where he was awarded the Purple Heart for wounds sustained in the battle. Both Donovan and another leatherneck cartoonist and former Marine, Fred Lasswell, worked on Barney Google and Snuffy Smith. Lasswell's cartoons typically centered on women or aspects of gender. One of his cartoons deals with female Marines and the fact that a homely sergeant was taking all the good dates due to rank. Another cartoon in this theme was that of Hashmark, a private who is working on cleaning the barracks, who eventually makes the cleaning materials, in this case mops, become part of a pin-up in the barracks. Chapter 2. Norval Packwood and the creation of Leatherhead. Norval Eugene Jean Packwood served as a chronicler of the Marines during the Korean War. His first book was titled Leatherhead, The Story of Marine Corps Boot Camp, in which he described the process of making men into Marines during boot camp to the uninitiated. His work in this case is similar to Ted Ritter and Bob Gadboyce's souvenir book Boots and Boondocks, The Story of Marine Boot Camp, which was made available for sale to all recent graduates of basic training, regardless of service branch. The titles of these books depended on the branch. In Packwood's case, Leatherhead was only for the Marine Corps. As was noted in the preface of Leatherhead, Packwood was aiming to produce a book on how things appeared to the recruits at the time, not necessarily as they really were for those going through boot camp in the late 1940s. The first few pages of the book are focused on the physical aspects of induction, which makes light of those who volunteer, as well as the seeming physical limitations that may exclude others. It is after these introductions into the ways of the Marine Corps that the reader meets Sergeant Bone Crusher, who most certainly fits the archetype of the Marine drill instructor, D. Packwood presents the common trope of the ideal soldier who has nothing inside his head and is therefore the ideal receptacle for military training. This concept has been presented in cartoons throughout different wars and by different militaries. One British cartoon from World War I went even further and simply illustrated a recruit without a head. As one works through Leatherhead, there are the usual physical inspections. The book then covers the issuance of equipment and the first day of boot camp. Packwood uses his cartoons to illustrate the preparation for life in the Marine Corps versus the actuality of it all. Other themes that permeate all aspects of the Corps regardless of period of service is reporting to sickbay. One cartoon has a medical corpsman asking, "What's wrong with you?" when it is clear that the recruit has clearly suffered from an incident during bayonet drill. One could look at this cartoon and simply add the line, "Here's a Tylenol and a straw." Once in boot camp, there is not only a transition to military rules but also testing for aptitude, as well as medical exams, which become a trial unto themselves at times. The idea of military aptitude for service in the Marine Corps was assessed using the General Classification Test, GCT. The Armed Services Vocational Aptitude Battery, SVAB, was introduced as a replacement for the GCT in the late 1960s and became the standard for all military services in the early 1970s. The idea of service members clicking heels is an old gag within cartoons on the military. One cartoon that Bill Malden did for a bicentennial book on the Sodders of the American Revolutionary War had Prussian General Friedrich Wilhelm von Steuben giving the command, "Und wenn I yell ich tung, I want to hear dose rags click," to a soldier wearing rags on his feet, as his boots were worn out. Here, Leatherhead is simply dealing with his pants over his boots. The report to sick bay for a bayonet injury is an exaggeration, but in some regards it might be a variation of Maximilian Uriarte's Terminal Lance cartoon, where a Marine recruiter brags about the medical benefits offered by the Marine Corps but later, when an enlisted Marine asks to go to the battalion aid station for a fever, he is told, "No, but I do have a straw you can have. So you can suck at the F-sharp CK up, boot." The idea of close order drill, rifle inspection, and the mentality that every Marine is a rifleman is clearly noted here. Be it the idea of the proper maintenance to prevent jams or maintaining proper execution of movement, the concept of muscle memory was then, and is now, still paramount. Weapons training was also a source of humor in Leatherhead. The training cycle, combined with what is expected, what is not expected, and the occasional carelessness exhibited permeated Packwood's cartoons. Whether it was the idea of qualifications, practice on the grenade range, or proper weapon safety, the concept of humor for what is intended to be serious training and education is prevalent in all of the military services. One gag is not as relevant now, the stoppage cartoon that shows an M1 Garand rifle thumb injury, but the basic elements of grenade usage remains pertinent. It came all apart. Other issues that are not as well noted in the training schedules were the obligatory films for training and education. Rather than mere lecture, films can offer better information for those who are visual learners or are not as literate, which was a concern especially in the 1940s. Packwood also noted that his character Leatherhead was briefly turned off to women due to a film he watched in boot camp about various sexually transmitted diseases. One of the constant fears of any military service branch is the loss of competence due to self-inflicted wounds or destructive behavior. Alcohol consumption is a common theme throughout military cartoons, as is female companionship and the possibility of sexually communicable diseases. Leatherhead refers to the standard venereal disease films shown at the time and how they can have a variety of consequences. A 3-page cartoon tells the story in Tokyo straight ahead, as well as some cartoons produced during World War II. These were often shown to service members during the interim period before the war in Korea. By the end of the book, Leatherhead is now part of the Marine Corps, but the expectations of a newly graduated Marine versus the reality of life on post can sometimes be jarring. These themes carry through to modern times, with variations based on generational and societal differences. Chapter 3. The Korean War in Brief. As a brief historical overview, the Korean War may be broken into 4 phases. For more on the U.S. Marine Corps during the conflict, consult the service's official histories for 1950-53. June-September 1950. On June 25, 1950, armed forces from the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, DPRK, or more commonly North Korea, launched a surprise attack across the 38th parallel, a demarcation line established by U.S. and Soviet forces during the Potsdam Conference in 1945, following the liberation of Korea from Japan, that defines the separation between North and South Korea. As DPRK forces pushed south, the President of the Republic of Korea, ROK, or more commonly South Korea, Syngman Rhee, appealed to the United Nations, UN, for direct assistance, which was authorized. The first contact between UN forces U.S. Army Task Force Smith, led by Lieutenant Colonel Charles B. Smith and the DPRK, was just north of Ozan. By the end of July, DPRK forces had pushed UN and ROK forces to a small section of the southeastern portion of the Korean peninsula, from Pohang along the east coast to Daegu in the center and south to the bottom of the peninsula. This salient was called the Pusan Perimeter, with the port of Pusan as its central control point. While UN forces were stationed all along the perimeter, the U.S. Marines from the 5th Marines served at the bottom of the perimeter near Masan Ni. This so-called Fire Brigade of Marines would later be part of the Sunkhan Offensive, which pushed out the perimeter. September-December 1950. On September 15, 1950, Operation Chromite, the UN amphibious invasion of South Korea at the port of Incheon, now Incheon, saw the 1st Marine Division and the U.S. Army's 7th Infantry Division land on the Korean Peninsula's western coast. Following the initial landings at Green Beach on Wolmidu, the Marines of 3D Battalion, 5th Marines, held out for 12 hours before reinforcements and the other units landing at Red and Blue Beaches could be brought ashore. This bold stroke caught the North Koreans off guard and soon reversed the momentum of the war. Following a furious fight, during which the ROK capital of Seoul to the north was liberated on September 30, the Marines were withdrawn and then landed at the port of Wonsan, located on the eastern coast of North Korea, on October 26. From there, they eventually pushed north to the Changjin, Chosin, Reservoir. Many thought that the UN forces would push to the Yalu River, which lay on the border between the DPRK and the People's Republic of China, and that the war would be over by Christmas. However, it was at this juncture that Chairman Mao Zedong of the Chinese Communist Party sent approximately 500,000 soldiers of the Chinese People's Volunteers Force, CPVF, across the border to join the fight on the behalf of the DPRK. This set the stage for Phase 3, during which the Chosin Reservoir campaign was fought. December 1950 April 1951. During this phase of the war, UN forces, particularly the 1st Marine Division, the U.S. Army's 2D, 3D, and 7th Infantry Divisions, and the ROC's 3D and Capital Divisions, were driven from the Yalu River area and pushed south by the CPVF. The UN forces were eventually pushed back across the 38th parallel. Marine Corps forces, along with approximately 100,000 civilian refugees, evacuated the port of Hung Nam on December 25, 1950. Following a phased withdrawal and regrouping at Ma San near Pusan, fighting erupted again in February 1951, and a major UN counteroffensive. Operations Killer, 20 February-6 March, and Ripper, 7 March-4 April, was successful in retaking Seoul and bringing UN troops back up toward the 38th parallel. Marine Corps Corporal, later Sergeant, Ralph H. Schofield sketched several aspects of the fighting at Chosin during this phase of the war. His work, while not humorous, was intended as a more realistic illustration of the events on the battlefields of Korea. April 1951 – July 1953. The fourth and final phase of the war was both the longest and least geographically vast. The Marines operated in an area stretching from Pohang, on the southeast coast of the Korean Peninsula, to Korwon, in the central section north of the 38th parallel. During the next 2 years, the Marines, along with UN forces, fought in locations with such memorable names as the Iron Triangle, the Punch Bowl, and Bunker Hill. Sweeping operations that had begun in early 1951 with Operations Killer and Ripper eventually shifted to a war of attrition and minimal gains. After a considerable amount of fighting, as well as negotiations that faltered several times, the March 1953 death of Soviet Union leader Joseph Stalin marked a change in the international situation, subsequently weakening backing for the DPRK and their war with the ROC. Following two prisoner exchanges, a ceasefire was announced on July 27, 1953. The border between North and South Korea has remained the same since that time. It was during this phase of the war that Staff Sergeant Gene Packwood came to Korea in 1951 to report on the fighting for Marine Corps Gazette. Later reports came from men like Bill Malden, who was in Korea for Collier's Magazine in 1952. Chapter 4. Leatherhead in Korea. In the spring of 1951, Staff Sergeant Norval Eugene Packwood entered the Korean theater on a three-month assignment for the Marine Corps Gazette. It was during this time that he was attached to several units and wrote stories and drew illustrations to augment them. Packwood's illustrations were such that, as one example, even air crews commented on the accuracy of his drawings of the interior of their planes. Packwood later wrote a comic-style history of the Marines in the Korean War. The work for this continued through early spring, as Operations Ripper and Killer were coming to an end. Packwood's work on the history of the Marines was well received because, even though he was not directly involved in the fighting, he captured the feeling of the men and the moment. The book starts with its hero, Leatherhead, a Marine Corps reservist, being activated and sent to Camp Pendleton in Oceanside, California. There, he is loaded onto a troopship for Kobe, Japan, and then sent to Pusan, South Korea. While the fictional Leatherhead is part of the 1st Marine Division, he was not part of the 1st Provisional Marine Brigade, the so-called Fire Brigade that had fought at the Pusan perimeter. The cartoons in the following pages represent in some way the majority of the 1st Marine Division's members, who were activated stateside and then sent to Korea. Packwood does not present the 5th Marines, who were brought over from Japan and served as the fire brigade at the Pusan perimeter in August 1950. While in Kobe, waiting for all aspects of the amphibious landing at Incheon, Operation Chromite, to be finalized, the 1st Marine Division was hit by a typhoon, which Packwood noted. While the severity of the storm was exaggerated to an extent, Typhoon Jane did hit at this time, and it was a hindrance to those waiting to depart for the Korean Peninsula. Regardless, these real-life stories in Japan added to an already tense situation for which the Marines were not fully briefed or prepared to undertake. One of the most problematic aspects of Operation Chromite was the landing area. Beaches other than Incheon had been considered, such as Kunsan, Gunsan, on the southwest coast of the peninsula, and Pyeongtaek, along the western coast but still 48 kilometers south of Incheon. The area of Incheon is plagued by severe tidal flow, with an average of 11 meters between high and low tides. This meant that the first wave of Marines who landed at the island of Wolmidu in the harbor would be cut off for 12 hours before being resupplied. The Marines who landed at Red Beach and Blue Beach would be slightly better positioned, in that they landed along the coast of Incheon and not on an island, but the same problems of resupply still occurred. The U.S. Army's 7th Infantry Division also landed at Blue Beach. The Incheon landings offered a much-needed booster for the Marine Corps, which was under increased scrutiny in the aftermath of World War II and on the radar of the U.S. National Security Establishment for elimination or consolidation. The consensus of leaders such as U.S. Secretary of Defense Louis A. Johnson and Army Chief of Staff Omar N. Bradley was that the Marine Corps was redundant, as the Army could just as easily conduct paratroop drops rather than amphibious landings, and as amphibious assaults themselves had been made obsolete by the introduction of nuclear weapons. Operation Chromite was the next phase of operations for the Marines in Korea, as well as for Packwood's focus, which included subjects such as U.S. Army General Douglas MacArthur's legendary ego, inter-service rivalry, and the brutality of war best represented by flamethrowers, all of which became the basis of the cartoons. Former U.S. Marine-turned-photographer David Douglas Duncan of Life magazine took photographs of the fighting at Incheon and hoped for an equivalent of the famed photographs of the flag raising on the island of Iwo Jima flag during World War II. His images provided a great visual history of the campaign, and his attempts to take great photographs became topics for some of Packwood's cartoons. It was in this sequence that the cartoons take on a slightly different tone. While the usual topics of women, alcohol, and liberty spots are noted throughout, another cartoon made light of the use of flamethrowers. Here, a Marine asks another where the flamethrower was, while the wall behind them shows two shadows of North Korean soldiers burned into it. This is an example of the gallows humor for which war combatants are known throughout history. The cartoons here rely on images from the landings at Red and Blue Beaches at Incheon. The gag in the first cartoon is one that could be a scene from any family road trip but clearly pokes fun at pre-combat nerves. The image of the battle-hardened, tough-looking Marine becomes a gag in its own right. The photographic correspondent for much of the fighting was David Duncan, a World War II veteran, while many of the Marines coming ashore were a mix of new recruits and old salts. The use of General MacArthur and his ego was important here. His self-esteem was almost as notorious as his popularity with the American people, and he was looking to use the landings at Incheon as an opportunity to further his political career. However, the landings also solidified the image of the Marines as shock troops who could pull off the seemingly impossible. The idea of destroying a Soviet T-34 medium tank with an underpowered bazooka when the ship to upgrade from the World War II era 2.36-inch model to the new 3.15-inch super bazooka had already occurred was intended to be ridiculous. There are also cartoons and commentary on Korean culture. The gag featuring the old-school gunnery sergeant refers to how Koreans use the bathroom or even rest while talking. In the West, sitting this way for long periods of time puts strain on the knees if one is not used to it. In the other panel, the idea of a Korean speaking better English than a Marine speaking Korean pokes at an old stereotype of a Marine's having less than stellar intelligence. Syngman Rhee, the president of South Korea, was educated in the United States, and so while the presumption of non-English speakers was common, it was not quite what the reality might entail. This next cartoon is a direct reference to David Duncan and Life magazine. While the hope that such a perfectly framed, iconic image as Joseph J. Joe Rosenthal's photograph of the flag raising on Iwo Jima in 1945 might again materialize at Incheon, Duncan's photograph of the U.S. flag raised on a Korean building was one that did resonate among the Marines. Many of Packwood's cartoons juxtaposed gallows humor with the beauty of life versus the horrors of war. Korean temples are quite ornate and beautiful, and the idea of preservation was not only one of aesthetics but practicality, as whenever possible there were attempts to avoid destroying cultural artifacts. While this was not practical in all circumstances, it did occur then, as well as now. The focus on alcohol and women returned during the series of cartoons. Once the fighting was finished, the need to reaffirm life or to forget trauma was achieved through escape. The Marines were pulled off the line soon after the recapture of Seoul on September 27, after which they were loaded onto boats for the landing at Wonsan on the east coast of North Korea. Packwood then discusses the brief period of time between the liberation of Seoul and the uncontested landings at Wonsan. The area had been secured by fast-moving United Nations, UN, forces, which prompted the veteran Marines to complain that the landings were not contested. The Marines noted that they missed a United Service Organizations, USO, show at which Marilyn Maxwell performed to the push north to the Chosin Reservoir, after which they had to deal with the entrance into the war by the Chinese People's Force Volunteers, CPFV, who attacked across the Yalu River as allies of the Democratic People's Republic of Korea. In this cartoon, a gunnery sergeant discusses life in the old corps and how easy the new Marines have it. This is another theme that continues to this day, as each iteration of the corps thinks that newer Marines have it easier than they did. Is this because newer Marines do not have to face the privations that previous Marines did, or is it something else? These concepts are common not only in the U.S. military services but also in many aspects of civilian life, be it education, employment, cost of living, or child rearing. The fighting at the Chosin Reservoir. The section of Leatherhead in Korea that covers the Chosin Reservoir campaign focuses on the brutal conditions created by the climate and geography of the area as well as the bitter fighting itself and offers a gallows humor approach from the Marine perspective. These cartoons reference the incredibly difficult terrain that was encountered by UN forces as they pushed north. Much of the country on the Korean Peninsula, especially farther north, is mountainous and, by this point in the war, was covered in snow. This created difficult conditions at best and became far worse when fighting in cold weather. On November 23, 1950, just after Thanksgiving, the Marines came into large contact with CPVF soldiers around the Changjin Reservoir, known then as Chosin due to the older Japanese name on maps, some 125 kilometers north of the port of Hungnam. One cartoon here is notable in that it is one of the few published military cartoons that showed dead soldiers of any sort. In this image, Leatherhead holds a U.S.-produced M1.45 caliber Thompson submachine gun, and his sergeant comments, "Lend-lease." This was a reference to the fact that the United States contributed weapons and materiel support to Chinese nationalist forces during World War II, only to have the Chinese Communist forces capture them during the Chinese Civil War and then use those same weapons against U.S. forces in Korea. Another cartoon that speaks to the immediacies of combat is that which features a forward air controller calling in a napalm strike against an enemy position, which in this case is a Korean house. Given the fact that the house is a wooden structure and that fires were not allowed otherwise, the burning structure warmed the Marines as they withdrew toward the port at Hungnam. These images are reminiscent of the David Duncan photographs in life at the time. Reorganization and Operations Killer and Ripper. The cartoons below illustrate how troops celebrate holidays in a combat zone. One cartoon that has a lot of bearing on the culture of the era is the one in which Leatherhead nails to a wall adorned with photographs of famous people a picture of John Wayne from the 1949 movie Sands of Iwo Jima. This movie, combined with the landings at Incheon in 1950, gave a surge of significance to the heritage of the Marine Corps and helped solidify the service's role in the Cold War era, thereby ending discussions in the United States of eliminating the Marine Corps. The next series of cartoons shift back to the gallows humor that combatants use to offset the rigors of war. This has often been exhibited through practical jokes, verbal remarks, and the idea of elaborate traps or tricks to creatively kill an enemy. While many might see this as unnecessary or even cruel, it forces the reader to consider the idea of dealing with psychological stress. One of the more interesting comics in this section is that of the Marine short timer being wounded when the end is in sight. This seems to foreshadow the United States' next war in Vietnam, during which the first 30 days and the last 30 days of a service member's tour were the most dangerous the first month because the new combatant knew nothing of the conditions in the field, and the last because the combatant might become careless with the end near and the feeling that they are perhaps somehow untouchable. This concept is not usually associated with the Korean War, so it is telling that Packwood plays on it during the conflict. The next series of cartoons drives home the concepts of being wounded in combat, rehabilitating from those wounds, and the general disconnect from the war felt by the average American. In many regards, the disconnect on the home front is even more pronounced in recent conflicts, especially in an era of global communications and instant messaging. The cartoon on page 78 shows a variation of a Jody, with a Marine girlfriend ditching her Marine because of the stereotype of Marines fraternizing with the local Korean women during their deployment. Ironically, the girlfriend ends the relationship over the phone while sitting on the lap of a Navy sailor with lipstick on his face, which offers an additional dig given the constant competition between the two sea services. It is at this point that Packwood finished the story of Leatherhead in Korea. As was noted in the previous overview, the Marines continued to fight in Korea up to the armistice on July 27, 1953. The end of Packwood's book merely marked the ending of his work on the battlefields of Korea. However, he continued to illustrate a variety of other features for the Marine Corps Gazette. Chapter 5. Norval Packwood's work with the Marine Corps. Norval Eugene Packwood's illustrative work went well beyond his two books on the Korean War. While serving in Korea as a combat artist, he also reported on several different aspects of the war for the Marine Corps Gazette. One such story involved an aerial interdiction run. Entitled Night Strike, a combat art feature, Packwood noted how the mission unfolded as well as illustrated what the pilot saw through the canopy of his aircraft. The illustrations were so accurate that Lieutenant Colonel Evan C. Carlson, a member of Marine Night Fighter Squadron 513, VMFN 513, noted nothing wrong and asked that, if possible, full-size reproductions be sent to their unit for display and training. These drawings are so realistic that all of us in the all-weather training squadron who participated in Korean Night Intruder operations could visualize ourselves in the cockpit, diving under the flares, while keeping a wary eye on the surrounding hills, barely visible through the haze and darkness. Looking for that fat target, a convoy of trucks, we remember the keen excitement when we found it, the disappointment when we didn't, and the frustration if it melted away in the darkness before we could get on it with our bombs, napalm, and 20mm. Packwood also created non-cartoon illustrations for the Marine Corps Gazette. In the February 1952 issue, his work was featured as Korean sketches and offered a look into the daily experiences of Marines in Korea. Additionally, his work was used to illustrate the cover of the Gazette as well as that of Leatherneck magazine and even a guidebook for Marines. The October 1953 cover of Leatherneck featured an illustration by Packwood titled Marine Halloween Prank. He depicts a bewildered Marine officer who seems to have misplaced his Jeep on top of a guardhouse. Packwood actively contributed to several other Leatherneck covers, including January 1953, New Year's Eve on the Line, May 1953, Soldier Needs Directions in Tokyo, and September 1954, Lovesick Whale. Packwood has remained a man of many talents even into the year 2024. Chapter 6. Other cartoon work from the period. In addition to the works of Norval Eugene Packwood, Several other artists contributed to the experiences of the U.S. Marines in Korea. One was a well-known World War II artist for Stars and Stripes and a Pulitzer Prize Award recipient, William H. Bill Malden. Sergeant Bill Malden of United Feature Syndicate Inc. For distinguished service as a cartoonist, as exemplified by the cartoon entitled, Fresh, Spirited American Troops, Flushed with Victory, are bringing in thousands of hungry, ragged, battle-weary prisoners, in the series entitled, Up Front with Malden. William H. Bill, Malden of St. Louis, M.O., Post-Dispatch. For I won the Nobel Prize for Literature. What was your crime? Published on October 30, 1958. By the time of the Korean War, Malden had made a shift to private life but had been hired by Collier's magazine to report on the fighting in Korea and provide illustrations with his dispatches. Malden tells his story through two fictional characters, World War II veterans Willie and Joe. In this iteration, Joe is now the correspondent for a major magazine, and his letters to Willie often compare the things he is seeing in Korea to those that they experienced in Europe during World War II. While both the fictional character and the real reporter traveled with the armed forces in Korea, the focus here is on the Marines. Malden followed a Marine engineering unit in early 1952 as its members were working on roads and landing fields in their area of operations. While Malden only wrote a little on the Marines, illustrations showed the Marines adopting a child mascot, a Korean orphan whom the unit looked after, and a bulldozer clearing a road to Hill 881, a tree with a sign on it saying, Go places, join the Marines, with a small dog named Napalm under the sign. Another cartoon depicted a Lieutenant Gray, who was serving as an observer. What made this cartoon interesting is Gray's wearing of a flak jacket for the first time as standard military equipment. Civilian comic books also used the fighting of the Marines in Korea to base stories in war comics. Realistic war-themed comics from this era included that of EC Comics' Two-Fisted Tales and Frontline Combat. Edited and managed by Jack Davis, these stories were often written and illustrated by World War II veterans from all the U.S. military services, so the stories were not meant to simply show propagandistic aspects of the war or bravery with no repercussions, but the more complex issues associated with combat. One issue centered on the fighting at Chosin. Another artist who started with Stars and Stripes during the Korean War era and made his fame and fortune later was Sheldon A. Shell Silverstein. His work was eventually compiled into the book Take 10, which was released in 1955. Many of these cartoons were not centered on combat in Korea but did reference aspects of the war. One such cartoon dealt with Russian agents, while others noted the fear of continued combat exposure without end, with appearances of soldiers in cold weather gear, and one very dark cartoon about a service member who hanged themselves rather than return to the front. While Silverstein created cartoons for Stars and Stripes after the fighting in Korea had ended in July 1953, themes from the war certainly continued throughout his cartoons. Only one illustration seemed to be tangentially related to the Marines, which shows a sergeant with a Marine pattern helmet cover being addressed by a half-dressed soldier with boots on his hands. The caption reads, You said you wanted to see boot soles and elbows. On the whole, the cartoons are geared more toward the U.S. Army, but they are still indicative of the humor of the era. Sketches also came from other sources that were not publicly available until much later. For example, Roger G. Baker served as a tank driver with the 1st Tank Battalion, 1st Marine Division, in 1951-52. He often sketched scenes for his family and friends that were preserved by his family. While not published at the time, these illustrations became part of Baker's memoir of his time in Korea, entitled USMC Tankers Korea, The War in Photos, Sketches, and Letters Home. His illustrations often have a humorous element to them and again offer the reader an insight into things that he noticed and found humor in at the time. Several illustrations dealt with the fighting in and around the punch bowl near Chuncheon, along the 38th parallel on the eastern side of the Korean Peninsula. One cartoon in particular is of interest, not necessarily due to its content homemade alcohol but because of one of the Marines shown. This particular Marine looks to be African American, which is notable given that integration in the U.S. military services had only occurred in 1948 under Executive Order 9981 by President Harry S. Truman. Other cartoons illustrated by Baker show local civilians or members of the Korean Marine Corps or Baker sketching an image while he sits in the rain. Another book that featured many cartoons of the fighting in Korea was the publication Out of Line, a collection of cartoons from Stars and Stripes Pacific, which was a 1952 compilation of cartoons from Stars and Stripes. The introductory section of the book noted the artists featured as well as their units. The Marines noted in the book were identified with service or air units rather than the combat units. This does not necessarily imply that they did not see combat, but simply that they were identified as being with a support unit. Two of the Marine cartoonists featured in Out of Line include Master Sergeant Clayton R. Barrow and Technical Sergeant T. Murray. While Murray was listed as a Marine Corps reservist, Barrow was listed as serving with 1st Marine Division. The two cartoons by Barrow take place during winter, so one might assume that he was present either during the Chosin Reservoir Campaign, November-December 1950, or during Operations Ripper and Killer, February-March 1951. In the first cartoon, a splayed-out lieutenant is on a field radio asking for some sort of support as he and his Marines are in very close proximity to Chinese forces. While the facial characteristics are clearly stereotypical, the uniforms are distinctly Chinese winter uniforms in that they are quilted. The second cartoon shows an unshaven Marine directing a new officer, who rides a donkey, to where the company is located, but that he should quickly get your ass off the skyline. Most notably, the joke passed censors for publication since it describes the officer's mode of transportation, but it also shows that the officer is new to the area and perhaps combat as he is exposing his position. This next cartoon from Murray resembles the one by Gene Packwood. Here, two Marines sit in a foxhole, and one reads a letter noting from his significant other that the weather back home is cold enough to freeze one's ears off. If the reader looks closely, the Marines have stitches on their heads and their ears lay on the ground next to the foxhole. The weather during the Chosin Reservoir campaign was brutal, and these cartoons provided a form of gallows humor to deal with the difficult situation. Chapter 7. The Modern Era. For many Americans, the Korean War is poorly understood and seldom discussed at length in classrooms. It is often called the Forgotten War because it followed so quickly on the heels of World War II and, notably, the U.S. Congress never used its constitutional powers to declare war on North Korea. To further compound the issue, many Korean War veterans, who were barely legal adults when the conflict began, are now in their early 90s. This means that their stories have died with them in many cases. The books written and illustrated by Norval E. Jean Packwood and many others are not meant to be comprehensive histories of the war, but they serve as a touchstone in aspects of Marine Corps life that might not be openly discussed outside small service circles. These cartoons give the reader insight into the minds of those who experienced the fighting and climactic conditions, which in turn may augment other histories from that time frame. In that same regard, some comics may allow for catharsis in different forms. One book that came out at the time of the 40th anniversary reunion of the so-called Chosin Few offered the recollections of British Royal Marines, who were a part of the UN force and fought in the Chosin Reservoir campaign. Dog Met in Korea, written and illustrated by Steve Jordan, concentrated more on the interaction of the U.S. Army's 7th Infantry Division and the Royal Marines of 41 Commando Regiment, who were in the middle of the fighting during the campaign, particularly in the Koto Ri area. This serves as a way to further show shared experiences as well as an appreciation of how the UN forces work side by side. This is another aspect of the war jointness that does not get as much recognition in wider circles.